Hi, this is Jen. It's Friday, August 21st, and I'm reading today's edition of the Providence Journal. Back for more. Clambake tradition revived to honor Warwick historian. The late Warwick historian Henry A.L. Brown was one of the founders of the annual Gatsby Days Parade, but when his sons were growing up, they never got to go. That's because Brown, who died in 2025 at 93, always presided over the community clambake that took place the next day. His sons, William and Daniel Brown, were expected to help with the labor-intensive process, which included gathering seaweed in Swansea, Massachusetts, and going to a Warwick quarry to collect rocks. "We could never go to the parade because we were always washing the clams," Daniel Brown said. The tradition eventually fizzled out after more than a decade, partly because the clam bake had gotten too big, drawing more than 300 people, Brown's sons said. But this year, the Gatsby Days Committee decided to bring it back to honor America's 250th anniversary and Brown's passing. "I'm just ecstatic," said William Brown. "It's a wonderful tribute to my father." Technically, the Henry Brown Memorial Clam Bake was a clam boil, not a traditional clam bake, which requires digging a pit, building a fire, and using hot rocks and seaweed to cook the clams. But that didn't seem to bother the roughly 100 attendees who managed to snag tickets for the sold-out event and eagerly lined up for lobster steamers, potatoes, and corn at Warwick's Asprey Boathouse on Saturday, August 15th. For years, people kept asking when the clam bake would return, Gatsby Days Committee President Natalie Abernathy said. "This year it seemed like a fitting way to celebrate America's 250th and honor Brown's many contributions." "He was such a beacon of this community," Abernathy said. Henry Brown's sons recall traditional clam bake techniques. Brown was a legendary figure in Warwick, known for wearing a tall black silk top hat in the Gatsby Days Parade. He was passionate about preserving local history and the environment, dedicating his time to countless civic commissions and community organizations. He was one of the owners of Gatsby Point, a waterfront cottage community that operates on a land lease model, and spent nearly his entire life at Spring Green Farm, which has belonged to members of the Brown family since the 18th century. In addition to managing the farm and operating a nursery business for many years, he authored numerous books that drew on his encyclopedic knowledge of Rhode Island history and extensive personal archives. "Giving back was his middle name," William Brown said. The clam bakes that Brown organized back in the 1970s and early 1980s were an annual event hosted by Warwick's Ward 1 Republican Committee, with proceeds benefiting Gatsby Days, said Jerry Peschka, who organized this year's event. Back then, they took place at Salter Memorial Grove. "The first step was digging a shallow pit, then building a fire with pallets and firewood," Daniel Brown said. "Once it got real super hot, it was time to add the rocks. They had to be solid, rounded stones that would hold the heat rather than exploding," he recalled. Daniel and William Brown said their father would bring them to a gravel quarry in the part of Warwick now known as Metro Center to get new rocks each year. The clam bakes, extreme heat, created fissures in the rocks so they couldn't be used again. "A light layer of seaweed was placed on top of the hot rocks," Daniel Brown said. "It had to be rockweed, not just any seaweed. The food that took the longest to cook, such as potatoes, went on top of that. Next came ears of corn in burlap sacks and clams in wooden bushel baskets which had been soaked. Wet seaweed went between each layer, kind of like making a lasagna," said Daniel Brown. "On the highest level, you'd put your steamers and your lobsters, and you would cover it with a final topping of seaweed, and then you'd put the tarp on," he recalled. "You just kept spraying the tarp to keep it moist, and it would steam for about an hour and a half." Before the clam bake, the Browns would go to Soggy Inc. in Providence to purchase small veal sausages known as buckies, which also went into the mix. They'd buy large blocks of butter from a dairyman on Post Road and get ice at Johnson's Ice, which is still located on Sand Pond in Warwick. It was kind of sad when it died out, said William Brown, who recalled being put to work setting up tables and cleaning steamers. Some hope to make clam bake an annual tradition again. Saturday's event required considerably less work. A Cape Cod-based catering company, Clam Bakes, etc., set up 5 propane burners outside the Asprey Boathouse and steamed the lobsters, clams, potatoes, and corn in giant stock pots while cooking steaks and barbecue chicken on the grill. When I found out they were doing a memorial clam bake for my father, I was so excited, said Daniel Brown. I almost cried. It's so nice. I can't even begin to express my appreciation. During the event, the Gatsby Days Committee awarded the first ever Henry Brown Award to Peshka and his wife Patricia for their decades of service. The couple met while serving on the committee and are now celebrating their 40th wedding anniversary, Abernathy said. Abernathy said that the Gatsby Days Committee will be hosting 2 more events this year in honor of the nation's 250th anniversary, a community concert on September 12th and a scavenger hunt on October 3rd. Both will be free to the public. There's also some talk about having another clam bake next year and once again making it an annual tradition. We hope to repeat it year after year, Peshka said. I'm hoping they do it again, Daniel Brown said. I told them I'm in. I'll help. Rhode Island hopefuls caught in endorsement confusion. More than one Rhode Island candidate has been called out for making claims or suggestions that they have endorsements they do not have. The most recent examples are Vic Meller, one of 2 Republicans vying to become Rhode Island's next 2nd District Congressman, Providence City Council candidate John Goncalves, and Attorney General candidate Kim Ahern, with an ad featuring a plaque given her by Attorney General Peter Noronha on her last day as a state prosecutor in 2019. Goncalves has acknowledged he does not have endorsements from Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Ayanna Pressley, as suggested by a campaign flyer. I think the intent was to show our progressive values, he said. We are not endorsed by either of those campaigns. He also acknowledged that an endorsement page on his website listing the Providence Teachers Union, the Providence Sunrise Movement, and State Senator Tiara Mack among those backing him was outdated. None have endorsed him in the race. But others have not acknowledged a campaign misspeak or overreach. Meller. A dear friend's email that went out on Monday, August 17th from the Meller campaign featured a photo of Meller with former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani and Cranston Mayor Ken Hopkins under the heading, Endorsed by 2 Leaders, Proven Results. Rudy has officially endorsed our campaign, and that means a lot. He knows what strong leadership looks like, and he's putting his support behind putting Rhode Island first, Meller said in the email that went out after his weekend rally featuring Giuliani at the Park Theater in Cranston. We also received a powerful endorsement from Cranston Mayor Ken Hopkins, he wrote. Having the support of a mayor who actually delivers for his city strengthens the message that this campaign is about results, not empty talk, Meller said. This was Hopkins' response via text when asked by the Journal if he, the only Republican mayor in the state, had in fact endorsed Meller over Cranston oral surgeon Stephen Scully. I have not endorsed either candidate. I told both of them I am remaining neutral until after the primary. I have offered to help any candidate that is a member of my party. When pressed, he confirmed that he went to Meller's August 15th campaign rally at the Park Theater in his city. As mayor, I attended the rally to welcome Mayor Giuliani to my city. Did he endorse Meller? I did say I would support him, and I also said if Dr. Scully needed help that I would support any Republican candidate that reached out to me. Keyword is support. I never said endorse to either candidate. I said they were both great candidates, and I wish they weren't running against each other. Meller had not yet responded to Journal inquiries about his dear friend's email announcing Hopkins' powerful endorsement. Meller is not the endorsed state GOP candidate. He pulled out of the competition for that endorsement ahead of the state GOP vote, leaving the Republican stalwarts who attended the GOP endorsement convention with a choice, whether to endorse Scully or not. On a show of hands and then a standing show of support, those in favor of the endorsement prevailed, according to state GOP parliamentarian Will Ritchie. Ahern should take this down. It's brazenly dishonest to voters as presented. It's a ceremonial plaque, and constructing a paid ad like this is really misleading in a political context, said Keith Hoffman, who is also running in the four-way Democratic primary contest to replace Peter Noronha as the state's attorney general. Both are former state prosecutors. Noronha has publicly endorsed Hoffman, who served as head of the civil division in the attorney general's office until 2024, when he was named Noronha's chief of policy. He stepped down from that role last year in order to run for attorney general. In her Facebook ad, Ahern reads from a plaque she was given by Noronha when she left the Attorney General's office to work for the then-Governor Gina Raimondo and then chair the state's Cannabis Control Commission. It says, in part, "In recognition of your tireless and passionate commitment to justice, your unwavering dedication to the mission of the department and victims of crime is an inspiration to all those who worked with you. Your ability to happily forge ahead in the face of obstacles will be your lasting trademark." When asked about the ad, Noronha told the Journal, "Well, I gave her the plaque. We gave them to all lawyers who move on, Hoffman too. But I endorsed Keith, and hopefully that's clear to everyone by now and there's no misunderstanding about that." In response to a Journal inquiry, Ahern campaign spokesman Josh Block said, "Kim is enormously proud of her 9 years of service as a frontline prosecutor in the Special Victims Unit under the past three attorneys general, and this video features her reading the text of a plaque she received on her last day in the office in 2019. For Keith to suggest she cannot highlight this plaque on her social media because the person whose name is at the bottom happens to be supporting him minimizes her near decade of service to the office and to the many other prosecutors have been honored in this way," Block said. "I would also note that he posted this across all his social media channels yesterday, and he misspelled Kim Ahern's name in every post," Block added. Who will play music at legendary Narragansett Beach birthday party? In the past, Healy has successfully kept the identity of the special guest a secret and thrown off people with cryptic clues, making anyone's guess this year as good as anybody else's. The rumor mill is grinding in Narragansett to find out the details of a decennial private birthday party scheduled for August 22nd. The details are scant. It will start around 6:30 p.m. at the so-called Sandcastle by the Sea Mansion at 129 Boston Neck Road. There will be an outdoor concert. That's about it. But judging by its previous special guests, it will be no ordinary party. In 2016, Lenny Kravitz, wearing sunglasses and leather pants, surprised partygoers and others who squeezed onto the beach outside to watch his performance. 10 years earlier, it was rock star Sting. The party is in honor of Joseph Healy's 60th birthday. Healy is a New York City hedge fund manager who grew up in Warwick and graduated from Bishop Hendricken High School. He owns the property at 129 Boston Neck Road in Narragansett. The Providence Journal attempted calling Healy at multiple phone numbers associated with him, but was not able to reach him. Over the past two decades, for his 40th and 50th birthdays, Healy has thrown a big party at his Narragansett home, setting up a concert-grade stage and screen so people on the beach can enjoy the performance, too. The staging and lighting for this year alone cost about $260,000, according to building permit records. Healy's birthday bashes have become the stuff of legend in Narragansett. About 6,000 people showed up on the beach for the Sting concert in 2006, Healy told the Providence Journal previously. In the past, people have shown up at the beach and set up camp hours before the party begins. This year, the Narragansett Police Department will provide security for the event, according to Police Chief Kyle Rikas. Besides giving himself and the town a memorable birthday present, the event in the past has had an altruistic element. The 2006 and 2016 parties both benefited the We Are Family Foundation, founded in 2001 in the wake of the September 11th terrorist attacks, to create programs that promote cultural diversity to solve global problems. Nile Rodgers, who co-wrote a song called We Are Family in 1979, from which the foundation gets its name, helped organize the performances for Healy's previous birthday parties. The remaining question in many minds in Narragansett now is, who will the special guest be this year? Some have speculated the guest will be Bon Jovi or even Taylor Swift, who owns a home on Watch Hill in Westerly. Others are convinced it will be the Red Hot Chili Peppers. In the past, Healy has successfully kept the identity of the special guest a secret and thrown off people with cryptic clues, making anyone's guest this year as good as anybody else's. Rhode Island will stick to child vaccine schedule after Trump order. Rhode Island's child immunization schedule will remain unchanged. The Department of Health and Governor Dan McKee announced on Tuesday, August 18th, challenging a recent executive order from President Donald Trump that seeks to loosen childhood vaccinations. The state's childhood vaccination schedule is grounded in science, data, and facts and aligns with the schedules of the American Academy of Pediatrics, the American Academy of Family Physicians, and the Northeast Public Health Collaborative, said a press release from the Health Department. There is no new evidence to justify the changes in this executive order, the press release said. Vaccination recommendations should be based on science, not ideology, said McKee in a statement. No matter what is happening at the federal level, we will continue to ensure that Rhode Islanders have access to vaccines and fact-based vaccination information to help keep themselves and their families safe, McKee said. Vaccines work. They help make communities healthier, and they help keep kids in the classroom learning. The release explained that healthcare professionals recommend children receive vaccines at specific ages based on when their immune system will respond best to them and when they are most vulnerable to certain diseases. Some vaccines protect against multiple diseases, such as the MMR vaccine designed to fight measles, mumps, and rubella. MMR vaccine and the other vaccines in Rhode Island's childhood immunization schedule are safe and effective. Delaying immunization misses crucial periods of potential exposure, putting infants, children, and adolescents at risk. There is absolutely no evidence that vaccines cause autism, the release said. The Northeast Public Health Collaborative, a coalition of 16 regional public health agencies that Rhode Island is a member of, emphasized the effectiveness of vaccines and its endorsement of immunization schedules issued by the American Academy of Pediatrics. Undermining confidence in the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine used for over five decades during the largest measles outbreak in decades will lead to additional measles cases and potentially deaths. Immunizations save lives, and parents should be able to trust that the health recommendations they receive are based on science, said a statement attributed to the collaborative. Drought watch lingers in Rhode Island as farmers are holding their breath. Despite record-breaking rainfall in July and continued precipitation in August, groundwater resources still aren't back to levels that would support lifting the watch designation, members of a state committee said this week. A drought watch, as expected, will remain in place in Rhode Island for another month. Despite record-breaking rainfall in July and continued precipitation in August, groundwater resources still aren't back to levels that would support lifting the watch designation. Based on what we've heard, we're not quite ready to downshift, Meredith Brady, chair of the Drought Steering Committee, said at the August 18th meeting. but Brady, associate director of the Division of Statewide Planning, said the numbers are heading in the right direction, and if the pattern holds, the committee would probably be able to downgrade the state's drought status to an advisory level when it next meets on September 22nd. Under the state plan that guides the management of drinking water resources in Rhode Island, there are four drought phases that increase in severity, going from advisory to watch to warning to emergency. While drought advisories have been adopted a number of times in recent decades, drought watches are much rarer. When Governor Dan McKee declared a watch in July, it was only the second time in the state since 2002. The decision was made after a year-long stretch of low rainfall from June 2025 to this past May, during which the state got only 80% of its historical average for a cumulative deficit of 13.4 inches. While Providence Water and other major suppliers that use surface water reservoirs for storage haven't been seriously affected by the precipitation shortfall, drinking water systems that rely on underground aquifers have been at risk. South Kingstown, Narragansett, and Westerly enacted outdoor water restrictions as levels in wells that supply the communities fell well below where they normally would be. The state's drought phase is determined by a combination of data related to rainfall, stream flows, and groundwater levels in monitoring wells. Last month's total rainfall of more than 10 inches in parts of the state, with a new July record set for Newport County, means that no region in Rhode Island meets the drought criteria for precipitation anymore, according to Robert Magnia, senior service hydrologist with the National Weather Service. But groundwater levels, while improving, still meet the drought criteria, said Christopher Bruett, supervisory hydrographer with the U.S. Geological Survey. This is the first month that the rain has had a chance to really soak into the ground, he said. Hopefully next month we can talk about recovery, but we still need the rains to continue. The rains have been a welcome respite for farmers who, just a few weeks ago, were facing losing fields of corn and other crops. Most of the farmers are holding their breath, hoping to continue to get rain, said Henry B. Wright III, president of the Rhode Island Farm Bureau. Sights, sounds from practice. Patriots participate in joint event with Eagles. The Eagles have arrived. New England Patriots hosted the Philadelphia Eagles for the first of two joint practices on Wednesday, providing both the offense and defense with new opportunities. And they were opportunities both sides did not take lightly, as the Patriots had numerous successful drives, many of which were led by quarterback Drake May. As head coach Mike Vrabel said before practice, it's a good measuring stick for the team to see where it stacks up. I think there'll be a good way to gauge that. Yes, I think that this is intentional, Vrabel said. This is a very good football team. It has been for quite some time. Here are the takeaways from day 19 of Patriots training camp. Number one, the A.J. Brown-Drake May connection heats up on the field. It was an impressive day for wide receiver A.J. Brown, who caught four passes from May. But one of his best, which was also a highlight reel moment, was when the receiver managed an over-the-shoulder catch along the right sideline on a long pass from May that would have resulted in at least a 20-yard gain against Brown's former team. His only miss of the day occurred during the one-on-ones in which Brown went up against Eagles cornerback Quinyon Mitchell for his only rep. While he had a foot on the defender, he wasn't able to bring the ball in for the catch. Q got away with a little holding, Brown said with a laugh to reporters. I just have to finish the play. My right hand didn't get to the ball quick enough. My left hand got on the ball. That's on me. Number two, one minor fight. The only time tensions rose a bit too high between the two teams happened during a live field goal try. Eagles defensive lineman Jalen Carter was right in the center of the action. Vrabel immediately jumped in, breaking things up quickly before it could progress any further. Number three, highlights from one-on-one practice drills against the Eagles. The Patriots held a few different one-on-one drills, with some occurring between the receivers and defensive backs, while others were between the offensive and defensive lines. For the Patriots' offensive line, guard Mike Onwenu had two impressive wins, one of which occurred against Eagles star defensive tackle Jalen Carter. Center Jared Wilson also won both of his reps, while tackles Will Campbell and Caleb Lomu each won one and lost one. Lomu's win came over Philadelphia's A.J. Epenesa. As for the defensive line, the Patriots' Gabe Jacobs split his reps, having a nice win over guard Miles Hilton. Milton Williams had a nice win over guard Landon Dickerson. Switching over to the receivers, Brown had only the one rep he couldn't bring in, but the other receivers had success. DeMario Douglas proved to be a menace, defeating star defensive back Cooper DeJean on three reps. Kyle Williams used his speed and impressive release package to get behind the defender on each of his reps, winning all three. Number four, more turnovers. The Patriots forced five turnovers on defense during the first day of joint practice, with safety Craig Woodson recording two, followed by defensive back Marcus Jones, safety John Saunders Jr., and cornerback Kendall Vildor, each adding one of his own. Saunders has been having an impressive few practices, also recording two picks during joint sessions against the Colts. "I'm excited to continue to watch him grow and make plays," said veteran safety Kevin Byard III. Number five, success in the two-minute drill and a solid performance by place kicker Andy Borregales. As has been a theme to end practice all summer, the Patriots wrapped things up with some two-minute situational sessions. May went first against the Eagles' top defense. His first pass was to Romeo Doubs, but the veteran receiver dropped it. Then he hit Douglas for a first down, followed by a pass broken up by Eagles linebacker Zach Bond. May then had another first down completion to receiver Mac Hollins, followed by an incomplete pass, and then the quarterback kept the ball and scrambled out of bounds. With the clock stopped at 18 seconds, May hit tight end Hunter Henry, but the catch occurred inbounds, forcing the special teams unit to rush onto the field. Borregales kicked the 52-yard field goal with 1 second left on the clock. When it was backup quarterback Tommy DeVito's turn, he struggled, making only a few incompletions, but he also completed passes to receivers Efton Chisholm and Hollins. Borregales went on the field for a long field goal attempt and made it from 57 yards. As for the defense, it sacked Eagles quarterback Jalen Hurts three times, once each by Woodson, Byard, and defensive tackle Christian Barmore. That brought up fourth down, but he was able to complete a pass to Darius Cooper for the first down. Philadelphia was then flagged for a false start. Hurts followed that up with two completions to Dontavian Wicks, then Hurts spiked the ball. With 11 seconds remaining and a fourth down, Hurts targeted Wicks again, and while it was complete, he was stopped inbounds with the clock running out. Then it was backup quarterback Tanner McKee's turn. His drive was stopped by cornerback Vildor, who recorded an interception.